What's up, everybody? It's Chad. I'm back again with another episode of Ask Chad Grassy Logic. This is episode 17 of season 2. We are moving along. I'm here with nurse practitioner Lori Sanchez. It took me forever to remember your last name this morning, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, I'm pretty sure it's Sanchez. I was like, but I don't want to put the wrong name or put the wrong spelling. And so...
Just Lori.
Yeah. I was like, I just put Lori for a little bit. Then I remembered it. I was like, it is Sanchez. Okay. So, but thank you again for joining me today. And it's great having you on. I have you on last year, but this year it's a little bit different. You know, you're a little bit, you know, further on with, you know, the business that you have and everything. And then we have a few changes that we want to talk about. And the timing of this happening was just wild because I had you scheduled for the show and then the DA decided to, you know, come out with the recommendation. And then now we're here to talk about it because, you know, you have a lot of good updates for us. We're also going to talk about, you know, the female orgasmic disorder. Figuring that we have a medical professional here would be a lot better than just me trying to spurt about it and, you know, talk about something I don't know what I'm talking about. So I'm glad that you joined me today. Real quick, I want to say thank you to Turquoise Bloom. They're actually today's sponsors, so thank you guys. And then we'll get on to the show and everything. So thank you again for joining me today. And I had you on the show last year. And for those of you that, you know, are new viewers, maybe you didn't see the episode, would you mind maybe giving them, you know, a little refresher of who you are and what you do?
Okay, cool, yeah. So my name is legally Lorraine Sanchez, and I'm a nurse practitioner here in town. Family practice. I own my own little private office. It's called Destino Bella, and really what it is a collection of kind of everything that I like to do all in one place, which includes primary care. I do medicinal cannabis certifications, and I do aesthetics there as well, aka like Botox, fillers, things like that. Sorry.
No worries. I mean, you do a lot, so sometimes, you know, sometimes it slips the mind and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I met you through, you know, the cannabis side and everything. Mm-hmm. But the state also decided that it'd be a good idea to have you as my, you know, primary care physician. So that's actually pretty cool. You know, I'm allowed to say that, announce it, you know, and everything. So yeah, she is my primary as well, which is nice because at the same time when I get my card done, I get my blood work done. So, you know, it's an all-in-one thing. So it's actually kind of nice, you know, and she's very thorough. So I appreciate that, actually. So thank you again for being on. And, you know, thank you for that update because, you know, those who probably don't remember last year or, you know, the new people, they need that update. And it's, you know, kind of important for them to have it. So what really got you into going in this route in the first place? I don't think I ever asked you, or if I did last year, refresh your memory.
I don't think you did ask me. What got me going in this route, I guess when COVID happened is really when it was just kind of like the decision of what risk do I want to take during this time. At that time I had a baby at the time, and I was more afraid of being exposed and things like that, and I just decided to do my own thing at that point. And I knew I could, the telehealth thing was there, and now it's spawned out of control and everyone does it, but yeah. That's kind of how it started. And then it was like, well, I could do the cannabis certifications, I could put in the extra work to like research and know about it. And so I used the time during COVID to do that, learned how to do certifications, got with the state to do the electronic certifying and participate in all the meetings that we have. Mm-hmm. And just really learned up on it and how to help people to get certified and to help keep people safe. If they're going to be using cannabis with other conditions or things that they don't ever go to the doctor for, like PTSD, when you come to get your card certification, I will do like the screeners and the questionnaires that you have to fill out. So in case there is something big or in case this is your time, that let's talk about that now. I felt like that was a good in to like start helping people in that way. And that's just a different, I guess, crowd of people that normally kind of goes, I don't want to say ignored, but from the time you're about 16 till about 35, you just don't go to the doctor.
Yeah.
And so I feel like finding that population and talking about cannabis and being open about it too has really just kind of helped bring in, I guess, my patient population. But it's all based on if I can get you into the door, I can help you to live a healthier life. If I find your risks, help you to, I don't know, lose weight, drink more water, then you'll be good. And I'll sign your cannabis card and help make sure that you're safe about that. But it's just the full circle of kind of health that, I don't know, I feel like cannabis just, it kind of all came together.
Yeah.
With doing the certifications, because not all my patients that I do certifications for are like my panel of primary care patients, but usually what happens is you come for your cannabis card and then you get on the list to be a new patient, and then I can do everything, all of your care. And we already had that initial meeting and talk, so I'm not scary anymore to you. So it's a little easier to get you to tell me things and for me to help you when you're being honest also. So I just feel like, I don't know, cannabis just helped me in that way to be able to provide services and just kind of find my niche in healthcare here in Las Cruces.
That's dope. Yeah. And, you know, just to tack on that, you know, she actually helped me find out what I'm allergic to. And I found out I'm allergic to a lot of things. Yeah. The worst of it was grass. I am allergic to regular grass, not weed. Regular grass, I'm highly allergic to. So, yeah, you know, thanks to her, I found out exactly what I'm allergic to. And that's been a helpful thing because I'm actually allergic to sesame seed. Out of all things. Yeah, and I love Asian food, so, you know, it's unfortunate.
And then the mold thing that we were talking about, talking about allergies, one of the first questions I ever had when I started looking into even medicinal cannabis or what you have to do to certify people, it was very much, can you be allergic to cannabis? And it was very like, well, you can be allergic to anything. I mean, you really can. So it was like, what is the prevalence of that? How am I going to help with that if I encounter that with a patient? Was more why to go down that road. But now, talking with you, you're even proof positive right there that Chad, for example, and we're able to share this, and it's not HIPAA because here he is out of his own mouth, and we're talking about him.
Yeah. Allergic to a lot of molds.
He's allergic to molds, which also means he's allergic to penicillin. So he has a very strong mold allergy. So if you get some kind of flower that isn't dried properly, somehow got wet or sweat somewhere, and it sat for too long and started to grow mold, well, if Chad turns around and smokes it, what happens, Chad?
Oh, it's terrible. Pain in the chest, hard breathing. For a few days, I'll feel the scratchiness in my throat. Of course, coughing, you know, constant coughing, almost feeling like you're sick. nasal sinus kind of issues and stuff like that. You know, my eyes, you know, the whole works. I even get some irritation in my throat. I don't know if it swells or what, but I think it kind of does. So I'm not sure if you could probably elaborate more on that.
Yes. And then, I mean, back to the allergy thing, like that's a full out like reaction in all of the areas where the smoke penetrated. So anyway, the point is to just be careful out there with what you do get. Make sure that your products are from reputable manufacturers. You look at the labels, know what you're getting to, because if you have a reaction like that, maybe you didn't know you were allergic to molds, but you smoked something weird and now you're a big congested mess and you think you have bronchitis, or, I mean, you could get pneumonia, just saying, from that inflammation in the mold. But it's important to also tell whatever medical provider it is, if you are a smoker, and that means anything that you inhale that is not air, you should tell your medical provider about it, especially when you're coming in for a cough or something like that, because that does mean you are inhaling something that's not air. So there should be something down there, or there could be more damage because you're smoking something that's either too hot, even the heat. THC by itself is a natural irritant, so it will make you cough. But it shouldn't give you the hacking cough where you can't stop and then for days later you're coughing. That's not normal and you should go see a provider for that. But anyway, you can be allergic to weed. There you have it.
But thank you. I mean, there's probably a few people watching that could benefit from this. Yeah. So I really appreciate that thorough explanation, you know, and then breaking it down Barney style. I appreciate Barney style explanations. You know, I try to do that for everyone else too. You know, people appreciate it. So yeah, thank you so much. And you know, that was a great conversation because I'm allergic to a lot of molds. When I was in the military, I had to run around with this red big tag that said I was allergic to penicillin on my dog tags, and like it was a whole thing. So now I know exactly. I knew penicillin, but the other molds too, they could be found in cannabis as well. I mean, even penicillin could be there too. So yeah, you know, please be careful out there, you know, especially with growing and everything like that. If you find mold in your crop, it's probably best to get rid of all of that crop because there's a chance that all of it could have the spores or something like that. And someone like myself or someone even immune compromised, you know, that probably is really worse for them.
And that's the population, well, medicinally, that we're trying to help treat for things like lung cancer. So if someone's going through chemo and they're using and they're smoking to help them to eat, I mean, we don't want to give them pneumonia or give them some kind of extra problem on top of that. So yeah, it's important to just have some integrity, I guess, with your product and know that, I mean, even though it's so small, it could really hurt somebody.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Now, was there ever a time where you didn't really believe in cannabis or kind of had like a different thought process on cannabis?
Yes, of course. It was very much like, no, you just wanted to go be like Cheech and Chong and go sit on your couch all day. Like, how is that really going to help you? But now after meeting so many patients and especially just the chronic pain, I don't know, epidemic, whatever you want to call it, pandemic, that should really be it. Seeing what people went through with opioids, opioid addiction, opioid withdrawal, and then still trying to live with that pain. Seeing what they would tell me about cannabis and how it helped change their life, or how firsthand seeing that they take less when they're using the cannabis, or they've learned to now manage the anxiety portion of the pain, making their pain less painful because of the perception. And that's really long-term, like what you need to do, because that's going to be, I mean, a whole lifestyle change for you. If you have some kind of condition, that's going to be lifelong, like you have to learn to live with it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was really the bigger, I think, thing that drew me more to like believing in it, that, okay, I can see this person, they have, what is it, like osteogenesis imperfecta, that's just what comes to mind, and it's the condition from the movie Unbreakable, Mr.
Oh,
Glass.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Mr. Glass, how his bones would break just like at the drop of a hat.
You just they flick were so them weak. Pretty much, yeah.
There are people that live with that every day, and that kind of pain, I mean, is unimaginable to me and you. And yes, someone like that is appropriate. They should be on an opioid for that, but again, to help with the anxiety portion of the pain, to help with the relaxation that now after researching it, it's there, how it can help with muscle nerve relaxation and really help with the perception of the pain. That's when I was really like, I could believe it. Like the research connected with what I saw in front of me. I could see and look at a patient that had, I mean, fentanyl patch on in his wheelchair. I mean, hard for him to even just get around. And knowing that he came in smelling like he just hotboxed his car, which, but after talking to him and actually listening to him, it's like this man may smell like weed, but he knows exactly what he's talking about. And so that to me was really more eye-opening to know that, no, you don't want to just be silly all day and have a good time. You actually, it helps you to be functional. And so before, I guess, that experience as a nurse practitioner firsthand like that, that's kind of really what convinced me, because the amount of people working at a clinic in town sometimes that they would come in and it'd just be like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to get a contact from you. Like, you need to put some circulation, air circulation in here. And then talking to them, they're not at all like, hey, dude, like, no, they're totally functional and like, perfectly fine. So anyway, in doing and learning about medicinal cannabis, I was talking a little before that, it's more that I help you to not get high and silly. It's more the in-between to just help manage your symptoms and know when it's appropriate, when it's not. But yeah, that's just kind of how I got into it. But before then, it was like, no, these cute little 20-year-old potheads that broke their arm, like, you can't have medicinal cannabis. Yeah, like, there's a difference. But now seeing the vast majority of people and knowing that it's, according to the latest statistics, too, with the medicinal cannabis program, I mean, it's predominantly white males over 65. If that tells you anything in our state, that's the number one user. With additionally chronic pain and PTSD being the two top conditions. So, I mean, that really tells you a lot. And if you're a white male over 65, I mean, there's still a good 20 years left that you need to do your man stuff. So, I mean, if that's what helps you to go about your daily life, if you are retired, I mean, there's nothing that says I want you to sit on the couch all day. No, I want you to get up and go. So I feel like observing that kind of firsthand in some patients was like, okay, I would rather them be smoke a joint in the morning and then they go work on their garden than them take four or five oxys and then never leave the couch.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was just the big eye-opening difference to me, that I was like, okay, I can get behind helping somebody with cannabis because now I can see how it can benefit you.
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, I've experienced here in town, actually, I went to a clinic. I work out a lot, so I ended up pulling one of my back muscles. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had slipped a disc or something. I was like, I'm an old creaky vet. I don't know what happened. You know, I don't know. I was just in pain, and I was scared. Uh-huh. So I ended up going to the clinic, and I smoked a lot of weed before I went because I was in pain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't have any pain pills or anything at my house. So I was like, I'm just going to smoke a lot of weed. My buddy's going to take me, and then we'll see from there. And I got hell from the moment I walked in. You know, like, do you have a medical cannabis card? I'm like, yeah, I do. And then I thought they were going to call the cops on me. And then the doctor started scolding me and telling me that's not a good idea because there's fentanyl in the cannabis and meth. And like, yeah, she said, it's laced with this. And I'm like, but I grow it myself. And she said, well, still. And I'm like, whoa. She's even if you get it from a dispensary, it can be laced. And I'm like, who are you?
I've heard many of those reports from some of the patients coming for like ER follow-up, hospital follow-up, that the same thing, they get dismissed in the ER because there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that they smoke too much weed.
Yeah.
And they get dismissed for things like heart attacks. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're just dehydrated. Yeah. You just smoke too much marijuana. For a heart attack.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I was saying, you can't always judge by the waft that comes in the room, because it's like, oh my gosh, there's no way this person can just like coherent. How is he standing up? But then when you actually start talking to them, they make perfect sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you still shouldn't drive, you still shouldn't consent, you still, you know, those things. But I mean, there's a huge difference. And in the grand scheme of things, you could have just asked a friend for one of their leftover pain pills starts with addiction in some stories is it wasn't even prescribed to you. You twisted your ankle. You took one, then you took two, then you took three, and then you got your own, and then it spirals out of control.
Yeah.
That's just the stigma that exists.
Yeah. Unfortunate, you know, but, you know, we're still fighting it, and it's slowly going away. And, you know, fortunately, you know, people like you in the medical field, you know, that helps, you know, like to see that, no, guys, let's look at it as a different route. You know, of course, we need to be careful on certain things, blah, 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 you know, talk to your doc, talk to your patients. Yes. So that's great that you do that. And I appreciate that myself. So it's great that we do have people who are thorough and that actually believe in cannabis too at the same time.
Yeah. And then, so the New Mexico Cannabis Program is now called the Medicinal Cannabis Advisory Board. they're going through some rebranding and things, and we do meet once a month, and the director brings up a different research topic of conversation so that we can discuss the whatever latest research is out there, and to be able to give the recommendations to our patients or to pass on the knowledge. And so this last month we were talking about the cardiovascular risk associated with smoking. And again, I'll bring up that anything that you inhale that is not air can put you at risk for heart disease. And it, to put it in a nutshell, it boils down to the endothelial injury, which is the lining inside of your blood vessels that could get damaged from the smoke, any kind of smoke. And so that's just what we were talking about, is the research that they did was, which wasn't really robust. It was just kind of observational because of the scheduling of cannabis that we'll talk about later. But it did report that there was more an increased cardiovascular risk and more incidence of things like stroke. Stroke, I think, was the big one from that. And again, we discussed it at length, talked about the research that's out there, and it's really, I mean, long-term, you shouldn't be smoking anything. Putting anything in your lungs that's not air could put you at that greater risk. We can talk about, if you are an avid cannabis smoker, flower smoker, just to do some harm reduction in that point to just kind of help you. But if you're going to choose to smoke it, then you know that's part of the risk.
The risk, yeah.
The risk, yeah. So that's been brought up, I'll just say, with that latest research. But once cannabis gets removed to this Schedule 3, that will change and more research can come out. People hopefully can be more open and honest, and we can put what's really happening out there to the test.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll get to that conversation in a little bit. Let's actually talk about Destino Bello for a little bit.
Okay.
We didn't get a chance to like really tell people. I know we have such great conversations and I love it when you're on because like I learned so much. But I really want to talk about your business too, so people can, you know, visit and get this great, you know, service that you provide people. So where is it located in town?
Oh, we are located across the street from Mesilla Valley Mall in the Telcher Tower Plaza. It's going to be right across the parking lot from Pure Life. Tiffany's is in there too. And we're the first building on the right.
Awesome. And when do you open? Like, you know, Monday through Friday?
For the most part, we're open Monday through Friday. Our hours kind of vary a little bit, but solidly we're there 10 to 5 every day except Thursday. Sometimes Thursday afternoons we close early, but for the most part, yeah.
Pretty much Monday through Friday.
Some modified hours on Thursdays. I will do one Saturday a month. and that's only for the folks that cannot leave their job for their hour to see. We just have those Saturday appointments for those folks.
That's nice of you.
People need it, and that's kind of the same thing. Like, people need their cannabis card, and that's where I was kind of like, I can help you with that, but I can help you with so much more.
Yeah.
But that's kind of that ideal.
I love that. You know, like, you pull people in with the card, but I was so willing. I was like, you know what? Yeah. VA's going to do this anyway. Do it before them. I feel like you do a better job.
And I guess my whole philosophy behind even healthcare at all is that if you learn to take care of yourself, then you don't need me. Yeah. And that's kind of the point, is like, if you know what's wrong with you or you know how to handle it, then you will spend less money on it. You will be healthier for longer and you're good.
Yeah.
It's like, that's just my goal, is you come, I teach you what you need to do and I tell you what you need to do. If you choose not to do that, that's up to you. But if you listen, things might get a little better for you.
Yeah.
Like, but that's just kind of the simple, I don't know, just ideal that I guess healthcare, that's the way I think it should be.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
But anywho.
But you make it fun in the clinic. You know, I've said this before, that it's like a fuzzy, you know, comfy slipper, you know, being in there and walking in. So you've kept that, you know, going and everything. I love that, you know, being there. The other day I was sitting there, I was like, oh, I love this song. You know, just sitting there, just kind of hanging out. And, you know, of course, you know, like, there's many more women there than there is men. You know, it's more predominantly women. So they're kind of looking at me funny, but I'm like, she's my doctor.
and I get that all the time, that they're like, do you see men here? It's like, yeah, we do. It just, everything looks like a girl's bedroom, but
it looks like my sister's bedroom, you're right.
But no, we do see men too, so it's just predominantly there's just lots of women.
Nothing wrong with it. You know, it's just, I'm sitting there, I'm like, it's very pink in here.
But pink is the color of health. Mm-hmm. Not just I'm crazy being pink, so I mean, pink is really why. And I guess when you talk about branding and all that fun stuff, really that's kind of why there's like pink everywhere, because that's what it is. Pink is the color of health.
I mean, I remember
tissue.
It
anyway.
I love it, you know. And then you have the dragons up for, you know, the Chinese New Year and everything like that, so that was pretty cool. So you keep it, you know, light in there is what I'm trying to say. You know, it's very welcoming, it's very light, you know, and the fuzzy slipper thing, just, you know, you're comfortable while you're there. Your staff is very friendly, you know, and she's very friendly staff, very professional. So if you guys are in town, or even out of town, if you know, want to visit her for anything from your card to whatever, you know, hit her up here in town. I just wanted to make sure that we got that out the way too before we moved on to the next conversations. Yes, I want to make sure that we highlight your business too, because you do such a great job for the community. So I want to at least highlight that.
Oh, and before I forget too, I almost did.
Yes.
On June 2nd is, I think, World Cancer Day.
Okay.
So we're going to be having an open house for that. We're going to have all of our array of services that help specifically for cancer patients. So we'll talk about medicinal cannabis. We're going to reserve like an hour for whoever wants to show up and just wants to ask questions. I can answer questions. We'll talk about it in general, kind of like I'm doing here. And then I'll have some other patients that have been through it, various stages and different experiences with cancer. And they can be specific to you, that you can talk amongst yourselves with how you medicate and how it's helped you, to just kind of help you kind of get over, if you're interested, to learn more about it. And then our other services that have to do with cancer, we do hair restoration. So we do have, it's called a TED machine. It's a laser for hair growth that uses specific hair growth factors that we put in without a needle to help your hair grow back. And it is excellent for patients once they've completed their chemotherapy. I'll say that, once they've completed, that's when to start. But it's helped people grow back their hair. So we have that service. We also have the permanent makeup, because not just the hair on your head falls out, you lose your eyelashes, you lose your eyebrows too. And so just to help you still feel like it's you when you look in the mirror, that's just kind of the things that we have available to kind of help. So we'll highlight our services for cancer that day. We'll have a couple of vendors and things like that. But yeah, we'll just open the doors for you to come stop on in.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you. And I might show up that day just to show some support.
Yes. Yeah.
And
cool.
Be a good day to go. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. You know, and it's great that you guys do provide that services for people, because some people don't think about that, you know, with cancer, the mm-hmm. little things, you know?
The little things. Yeah. And that's kind of, I don't know, the one-stop shop kind of thing, which is hard to do when it's just me.
Yeah.
But if you're here because you're my patient and you've gone through this, and then, yeah, once you're done with me, you can then switch over, go to Ariel's side, and then just go finish getting your eyebrows done. So that way you don't waste multiple visits, multiple trips. If it's something that we can take care of all in one area, then saves time and good for all of us.
Way more efficient, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. And I guess we'll move on to the next conversation and everything, because, you know, we had such a great conversation, but we're going to go on to the next topic. But before we do, I wanted to take a second to thank today's sponsor, Turquoise Bloom, as I said at the beginning of the show. They're the home of the $5 pre-roll. You can find them at 162 Wyatt Drive here in Las Cruces. Take a walk through a field of flowers at Turquoise Bloom. All right. Thank you guys so much, and I appreciate that. All right. So the next topic we're going to be talking about is New Mexico may add female orgasmic disorder as a qualifying condition, or FOD. And I'm going to be referring it to FOD throughout the rest of the show because it's just faster to say. Mm-hmm. So right now we have a list of 30 qualifying conditions. And actually, Gino, do you mind popping that up for us real quick? There it is. There's that beautiful list. There it is. Yes. And she is looking forward to doing that. We got the doctor weather lady. So this is the list of the 30 qualifying conditions so far. And we're going to try to add one more because why not? You know, someone could benefit from this. And obviously, you know, people have, because there's the process that we have here in New Mexico. When I joined the program in 2013, we had like maybe 10 or 15, I think, mm-hmm. at the time. PTSD was one, because that's been what I've been under this entire time. Mm-hmm. And so throughout time, these get added, and it's not every year, it's not every other year. The process of it is actually kind of upfront, but you can kind of explain a little bit better than I can. Go ahead.
For the state of New Mexico, it is rebranded, and now it's called the Medicinal Cannabis Advisory Board. They meet twice a year, and it is an open meeting to the public. I can give you guys the website or the links later on, but there is where you can find, if you feel like there is a condition that's not listed on these 30 already, you can go and petition for your condition to be added. So it's a very specific form, has to have you bring, of course, the research base to it that would be in compliance with the Aaron Lynn Compassionate Act that makes medicinal cannabis legal in New Mexico, and then you would petition it before the advisory board and to open comment, and then if it passes and everyone agrees, and it gets added to the list of qualifying conditions. But I do feel like the list of 30 that we do have now is pretty encompassing of all things, like them wanting to add female orgasmic disorder to the qualifying condition. It's really, could it go under something different? I think maybe it could go under anxiety for it to stand on its own, because if, and not to get too technical into it, but a lot of times female orgasmic disorder is a lot more mental. And it is very something that happens akin to PTSD with the inability during sexual activity to enjoy it. And so the idea is with cannabis, well, it can take your mind off of it, ease your anxiety regarding it, and then maybe it can be something part of your daily life. So that's just kind of the idea of why they want to add that one to the conditions. But I mean, I could see not adding it and certifying somebody and really having the conversation about either PTSD or anxiety, and then it coming to this specifically like later. But if you have a condition that you feel like should be on this list, definitely download the form, fill out the paperwork, attend the meeting, and see if it can get added.
Yeah, and I've actually attended these before in the past when we were just medical. Mm-hmm. And I forget what we were petitioning to add. I think it was the opioid use disorder. Mm-hmm. That's actually what it was. And, you know, a bunch of us showed out, you know, and I actually got to see this process happen firsthand. But before the show, she let me know that a few things have changed. And so it's great that you're here to, you know, update us on that and everything. So I appreciate that. And as she said, if you guys any of you want to have something added to the qualifying condition, or maybe there's something that they that won't umbrella, which to me, it seems like there's a lot of things that it can umbrella. Can we pop that up one more time? It seems like a lot of things that are under the umbrella. I mean, like...
So it's more getting to like the root of the problem, because I would think someone with female orgasmic disorder does have some sort of anxiety related to it on its own, and or there's some level of maybe trauma in the background. So in that case, it would be doing screeners for both of those things, talking about what comes up on those screeners to see if maybe we can help with like talk therapy to help with that. But I think for right now, either one of those two conditions, depending on the patient and what comes up from her screening and that visit, I think for right now that those are the two that that could fall under without adding that specifically.
So do you think that we will get this one added as, you know, condition 31?
We'll see, because the research that you have to submit and the application does have specific qualifications, and you have to find research backing that, yes, it is a condition in compliance with the Aaron Lynn Compassionate Act, that you can be treated with multiple things that traditionally fail, that maybe cannabis can help. So that's a lot of things to be able to find and prove. So let's just see if the person petitioning for it brings that forward at the next meeting, which will be May 13th, and it is a web meeting, so you can go on, register, attend fully online. It's about 3 hours that they just, all the topics from adding conditions to, I guess, the temperature of cannabis, according to the state, is there. And now they've gone through some rebranding with that too. And on that page for other medical providers, they do have a provider tab there. So now you can go to the provider tab, log in, get in there, and then there's all kinds of topics and our prior meetings of anything we've discussed and research that's been brought forth with these great presentations that Dr. French, the director of the Medicinal Cannabis Program, that he brings forth at the meetings, and even just informational purposes. I mean, you can just go through, read through the slides really quickly, and it just kind of brings you up to date with what's going on right now.
Nice. And, you know, real quick before we move on again, we were talking about this earlier, and this kind of, you know, ties into the conversation. You know, why aren't we seeing so many more doctors here in New Mexico? Because I kind of feel like certain conditions like this probably would have been added sooner if we had more doctors.
Oh, more. Well,
just more opinions that, you know, patients could be like, oh, well, I have this, you know, we could add this.
Yes. Yeah. To be able to be open about that conversation has always been traditionally very hard because of the scheduling of it. Right now, still, it stands as Schedule 1. It's been recommended to come down to a Schedule 3, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But because it's Schedule 1, it's still very taboo to talk about. State-wise, I think you can do some research with it. But because it's Schedule 1, it's really still prohibited to be able to have like an open conversation of this is cannabis, this is how we treat it, because that doesn't exist yet here in the States, because it's a Schedule 1 and we can't have studies like that until it becomes a lower schedule, which if it goes to Schedule 3, that is going to be the number one benefit to it, is that now it can be openly researched anywhere in the country. You still have to follow all of the guidelines for research, but you can include it and we can find out a whole lot more information once we can have the research to back it.
Nice. Yeah, we'll get more on that too, you know, because once we get more of the research and everything, you know, we can literally make better decisions legislatively and, you know, through the doctors and the medical side too, because like we said, it's going to be medical. So with the whole, you know, going back to the FOD, you know, or female orgasmic disorder, you know, we shouldn't be afraid to say that. But it's just easier to say FOD because it's such a long, long term. What is really like, I guess, what it could be the negative impact of using cannabis for, you know, something like FOD?
Oh, so negative impact 100%, as with anything, somebody can react and have the complete opposite reaction that you're expecting. As with many medications, that's very true, and the same with cannabis. So if, especially using, let's say for right now, using the FOD and certifying them under anxiety. Well, if you give somebody with anxiety a strong enough sativa, they are probably going to think they're going to have a panic attack if the situations are right. So it could be very much that the wrong strain could bring about an intense reaction and make things 100% worse. So it would be, I mean, best to get a recommendation to see which one you should get to avoid that. But I would feel like that would be the number one, I guess, negative thing is that it could have the complete opposite and make things worse.
Got it. Yeah. And just like anything though, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It could do one or the other. So it's always, like I said, it's important to talk to a doctor, you know, of some sort, you know, to figure out where you stand with this, or maybe you have an issue that you think is it's fixing, but you actually have something totally else wrong. Like we're saying the liver failure issue, you know, maybe it could be something like that, stuff like that. And 'cause what do they usually prescribe for women, you know, when they have, you know, female orgasmic disorder? What is usually used,
It's not really well talked about at all. They'll go to either hormonal to see if maybe replacing their hormones or helping with that will help. Or they'll go to the same classes of anxiety, antidepressant medications to see if that literally helps you to change your perspective and change your mind a little bit.
Okay.
And not make it such a strong reaction to maybe one thing or the other. But that's exactly the idea of maybe medicating it with cannabis is that bring you down from that idea so that you change your mindset about it and it doesn't bother you as much. So it's really like the mental block thing. But for right now, psychotherapy, number one, always with any kind of anxiety or PTSD, because you really don't know what's going on in your head unless you talk about it with somebody else.
To
be fair. And I always say, crazy people don't know they're crazy. So until you really sit down and kind of hash it out and be able to be honest, talking with somebody can sometimes just get it off your chest, or maybe you shouldn't do this or do that, and that can help retrain your thought process and it can change your life. So that would be traditional treatment for I'm already gonna say a different letter already, female orgasmic disorder. I'm gonna make up different letters now. That would be like the traditional way. But the number of side effects with anti-anxiety, anti-depression medications could also make the situation 100% worse and turn you from just not being able to have an orgasm to have zero interest in sex at all. So there's too big of a span with medications traditionally used to treat anxiety-related conditions like that. I feel like it'd be a good idea, or maybe even to try it, that it's controllable by that person and they can tune into their feelings. What are they feeling? Did this help them calm down a little bit to enjoy the activity they're having? And were they able to just let that happen? And then they can be the judge of that. And then it wears off in like 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's better to take than waiting to take something every day for 6 weeks and messing with the dosages and waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
That's a lot harder to gauge how it's helping you or not. So. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm really glad that this is, you know, being at least talked about and being at least having a hearing on it. You know, we don't know if it's going to be added yet or not. I hope it does, because, you know, we were talking about the show before, you know, and then, you know, erectile dysfunction always gets the spotlight. You know, it's always the only thing they talk about. And I kind of always wondered it too. I was like, well, don't women have similar issues too? You know, this and that, you know, like, and then this, you know, kind of confirms it that, yeah, you know, that they do. And, you know, this is just one, you know, that could be of several. And so, you know, luckily cannabis is, you know, looking to help with that issue. And, you know, a couple of my buddies have told me that, you know, cannabis helps them with arousal as well. I don't know what the science is behind that for a guy. But I've had some of them tell me that, yeah, you know, it helps me, you know, certain cultivars, you know, I guess like sex pot, you know, there's a perfect example. They call that one an aphrodisiac. Now, I don't know how true that is, but, you know, for some reason people claim that, you know, it does arouse them a little bit more than any other cultivar. So, I mean, is there any kind of science behind that you know of?
The same science that's behind all aphrodisiacs, we can't tell because it's so subjective to one person to another to really know does it, doesn't it. But is that able to put you in the mindset for that? And that's like the purpose of like the strain. So, I mean, you could now take a survey and see. But I think I feel like the same reason for female orgasmic disorder, even some types of erectile dysfunction and even just anxiety related to sexual intercourse, bringing down your anxiety and just letting you relax and let it be is something very hard, I think, for a lot of people to do and unwind and bad things that have happened to you in the past. But if cannabis can help you forget about it for a little while and you can go back to enjoying a normal part of your life, then fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, being or feeling normal, you know, is something really important. You know, like, because, you know, especially like we're talking about someone with cancer, you know, just like the little things, you know, just the you know, the eyebrows, you know, that's something huge for them, you know, and something like this is huge for someone too, because, you know, some woman could have been dealing with this for years and years, and maybe it ruined a marriage, maybe it ruined other relationships, whatever, you know, a boyfriend, you know, situation or a girlfriend situation, whatever, you know, this could really be beneficial to those people. So, you know, I just really hope this does get added, because it could open the doors to other things, you know, more conversations that need to happen. I hear the lube conversation happen more, the suppository happening more, you know, and all those conversations are happening more, which need to happen, you know. It needs to be less taboo in that area, because we're all adults. And, you know, we're all getting older, so, you know, we need to be able to talk about certain issues and stuff like that. And for my guys out there, stop taking boner pills if you're, like, under a certain age, you don't need it. There's really no reason for it. You're going to hurt yourself. And I asked you this before the show, you know, is there, I mean, I know we're off topic of this, but, you know, this is important too, you know, because there's a lot of guys out there doing this. Is there any kind of health risks when it comes to using sex-enhancing or performance-enhancing drugs when it comes to sex?
So, of course there is. There's risks with everything that you do. You look at it. These are the good things, these are the bad things. Is the good going to weigh out the bad? Hopefully, and then you proceed. But if the risks outweigh the benefits, don't do it.
Yeah.
I'll just say that. But, I mean, using performance-enhancing drugs, I mean, that's just kind of like false advertisement, I'll just say like that. Just like athletes, I mean, you don't want them juicing testosterone and then being like Hulk strong, because it's like an unfair advantage too. But if nothing is wrong with you and you take something, you could potentially then break something, because now you're messing with the normal, natural way that your body is supposed to work. So maybe now, after using Viagra a couple of times for funsies, maybe then in the future, you won't be able to achieve as satisfactory level of a... to you, because now subjectively you took something to make it better, so now you know what it can do, and now you're going to want it all the time. So if you don't need it, you don't need it. The day you do need it, well, then we can talk, because there are big risks involved with taking, especially things like Viagra, because Viagra was discovered by accident as a medication for pulmonary hypertension, which is high blood pressure in your lungs, and they found as a side effect that all of a sudden it was giving males erections when they hadn't had erections for a long time. So then they decided to specifically study it for erectile dysfunction. But we do still use it for pulmonary hypertension. But the idea is that it helps to bring more blood flow to the area, which in an erection... that's what you need, right? To bring the blood flow in, to keep it up and then stay there. But there is a risk when taking any sex-enhancing drugs like that, that the blood flow could get trapped.
You guys remember 40-year-old virgin?
Okay. Yeah. So that's called a priapism. So that's a risk of taking any kind of Viagras, because that could happen. And the disclaimers on the commercials that say, if you have an erection lasting more than 6 hours, please visit the nearest ER, blah, blah, blah. That's what that is. And it sounds like it would be a good thing, but it's not. It's where all the blood flow gets trapped. It can't drain anymore, so it's now stuck there. And it pretty much cuts off its own circulation the way you would if you had a very swollen like ring or something that you can't get off. Because of the swelling, it can cut circulation off to itself. So in that case, they have to go in and relieve pressure, either with needles or taking you to the OR to make small incisions like a fasciotomy to just relieve the pressure so that you wouldn't lose your penis. So, I mean, you really have to weigh your risk versus benefit when doing those things. And like I said, if it's not broken, use what you got. And the day it stops working, then we can talk about it. But you also don't want to rely on something when you're 22, because what's going to happen when you're 72?
Yeah, because, you know, like, you're going to need probably, you probably won't even be able to use it. Or you probably have lost it in the process, you know, because of, you know, what you did. So appreciate that. You know, that was a really good explanation. You know, I know it has nothing really to do with cannabis, but it was on the topic and everything. And I kind of figured it was great to talk about.
Even on the topic of that, I mean, opening the conversation about things and opening the door to that, it's like, okay, well, what's normal and what's not?
Yeah.
Like, how do you even know if you don't ask? So yeah. Anything that will open the door and you can talk with the medical provider about into it. So you know what you're doing for yourself.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And thank you for that. You know, like some free advice for my young guys out there because you guys need it.
Yeah.
Stop hurting yourselves. So anyway, I really do hope that this condition does get added, the female orgasmic disorder. That does open the doors up for many more conversations. You know, I have been hearing more about the lube conversations, the suppository conversations, you know, this conversation, you know, the erectile dysfunction conversation, you know, et cetera. So that's great, you know, but, you know, if this gets added, I kind of feel it solidifies that and kind of, you mm-hmm. know, puts us in a progressive kind of state when it comes to that. So
yes.
Hopefully it gets added and we'll see what happens in the future with that. So that's really all I have for this part of the conversation. Do you have anything else before we move on to the one we know everybody is waiting for? Because like everyone's been asking me about it. Everyone's been wanting my input. Let's talk about the Schedule 3. Yeah, okay. So let's jump into it. And thank you all for being patient. I'm sure some of you probably have skipped forward if you're watching later on. So the DEA yesterday at the time of recording, so by the time you watch this, it would have been about almost 2 days, decided to reschedule cannabis to Schedule 3. Now, it wasn't them coming out right saying it. There were some, you know, really reputable sources that, you know, a lot of news outlets and a bunch of other people had that were echoing the same exact thing. So it looks like this is, you know, pretty accurate information and everyone else is, you know, sharing the same. So looks like we're going to be stuck with Schedule 3 like I've been saying this entire time. Human Health and Services, you know, they recommended Schedule 3. It's very rare that another, you know, government agency like this goes against another government agency when they make a recommendation, especially when it comes from, you know, a medical scientific standpoint. You know, it's very rare that they would do that because the DEA would then have to go and do something else if they wanted to, you know, debunk it. Mm-hmm. So they agreed and it's looks like we're going to be stuck with Schedule 3 for now. Now, I will mention this before the show started. It looked like a couple of senators had introduced another cannabis legalization bill. And this is, you know, just done right before we got here, really. And I wanted to make sure I mentioned this and not forget it because what this bill does is it removes cannabis from the scheduling altogether. So we could have it on the scheduling for a little bit, but I don't know how much of a chance we have of that bill passing. Now with Schedule 3 happening now, I kind of feel that there might be more of a chance of it passing because if it's Schedule 3, then what's the point of not passing it? You know what I mean?
I think it's still the way the federal regulation will roll with that, but... Yeah, it would be exactly what's the point now.
Yeah, like, well, why are we fighting it now? Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens with that. You know, this is totally off script and off the guide right now. I just wanted to make sure that I added that in there because literally like a few minutes before I got here, I was like, mm-hmm. oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So I'll update you more on that next week. I'll dig into that bill and see what exactly is in it. But I do know that it does remove cannabis from scheduling altogether. So you essentially get the decriminalization mm-hmm. thing. So I'll talk to you about the taxes and all that good stuff. So... we'll talk about this week. So it looks like, yeah, Schedule 3 is what we're going to be dealing with. And what that entails is, you know, essentially just medical cannabis is really what we're going to be getting. And since I have Lori here with me, she can actually update us exactly what's going to be going. Because I know you've been itching to share it. So if you would, please, you know, by all means, share exactly what, you know, we all been wanting to hear.
So this is just my theory of how it will work in New Mexico. I think our state has done a really good job of structuring the medicinal cannabis program. And ever since it's gone fully electronic, those of you that do have medicinal cards know that in your card and in the portal, you can go through there and check your usage, check where you've gotten product from, just like a credit card receipt. It's there and it's available. So the state has done a good job of connecting where the product is made, where it goes, and right to the consumer to the very end. So I feel like if we, when it becomes, because now it's a matter of time, when it does get descheduled to Schedule 3 federally, New Mexico, I feel like, is already set up to show to the federal government that you want to know where your Schedule 3 potentially addictive substance went. Here you go. Here's our database. We make sure they see a medical provider, they get certified, they have their credit card receipt of all the stuff they're using, and this is exactly where it goes. And I feel like it'll be in a nice, neat little bow to just hand over if they want to see our records. But I feel like the state's done a good job to account for where all the cannabis is grown and gone.
Yeah, and I agree. And I thought of this just now. You know, do you think that states like, you know, let's say Colorado, that have pretty much abandoned their medical cannabis industry, kind of shot themselves in the foot?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's certain states that are wrecked, but they essentially have no, you know, medical program. Mm-hmm. So do you think they kind of screwed themselves, essentially?
I think so, because to be able to benefit, well, if all the proposals go through and the techs benefit and when it gets descheduled.
Yeah.
for medicinal only, I mean, they're going to lose out on a lot. And yeah. Because the majority, I would say, of cannabis users probably do have some kind of condition that they could get certified if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And that's a huge population that they're going to just miss out on still paying those taxes.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because, you know, as you guys know, we pay the 280E tax. And with this being done for medical cannabis, you don't have to pay the 280 tax anymore. That only is for Schedule 1 and 2 substances. And since it's going to be 3, that no longer pertains. However, you're only Schedule 3 if you follow all the federal guidelines. If not, you're not. And I'm thinking that the 280E will still apply to you. And everything that I've been looking at is kind of reflecting towards that, because even all the documentation that says, you know, the government is saying that your activity will be legal under federal law only if you follow our guidelines. And so everything outside of that will not be. So that's why I've kind of been echoing that we're going to have two different industries. We're going to have a 280E industry and we'll have a Schedule 3 industry, especially at the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, at the beginning, there's really no way that we can't do that because mm-hmm. there's a transitional phase. Mm-hmm. You don't just flip the switch and everybody's medical now. Right, you have to satisfy the FDA. I think they want to go with the ATF as well. Was another thing I saw in an article. You got CDC is another one. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go through a couple of other ones. There's another one that deals with diseases and stuff like that. It's not the CDC. It's another one. I forget what it's called. But there's another one that deals with drugs too. There's so many little subsidiaries mm-hmm. that I forget that sometimes you're like, wow, you got to deal with that one too.
Yeah.
Because like ATF, yeah. I was like, really? I was like, recreational makes sense. I was like, all right, you know, so.
Yeah. ATF, okay. Because if they, I mean, tobacco, firearms, alcohol. Yeah. I could see.
Yeah. So that's one thing that we're still figuring this out. And the thing about it is the federal government is still figuring this out.
Yeah.
But the Schedule 3 is really only going to benefit the people that either can afford to get to up to par for Schedule 3, want to, or essentially they're able to, you know, for mm-hmm. whatever reason. And so that's one thing that kind of scares me because, and a lot of people are scared of because they're like, oh, Big Pharma is going to be the only one. But for me, we've already told the federal government, F off, we're going to legalize cannabis. What's going to stop us from implementing the same program we have now on the recreational side?
I just think with the Big Pharma side, there isn't enough money in it for mm-hmm. them to go and dedicate a whole distribution plant to making a medicinal product. Because they would have to take it through all of the, it's not that long anymore, but the process to get it FDA approved. And that would cost a lot of money mm-hmm. that would not really profit or benefit very much when you can just grow it in your yard if you wanted to. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I would be very surprised if Big Pharma, one of those big companies, did decide to do it, because even as of right now, Jonabinol, which is a synthetic version of FDA-approved cannabis on the market, that is super hard to get and find. There's maybe like one distributor that makes it anymore. And then the Epilodiex, which is the high-dose CBD that is FDA-approved for epilepsy, that one also is so sky-high and expensive. It's like, what's the point at that point if you can't afford it?
Yeah.
And if no one's going to be buying it, they don't want to make it. Like when they can make $10 million off of Oxy. So I don't think Big Pharma would be as much to like worry about.
And I agree with you, because we've seen these huge farms, because Big Pharma would need a massive mm-hmm. grow, you know, mm-hmm. and we've seen the quality that comes from these. That's mm-hmm. not medicinal quality. We've already talked about mold mm-hmm. and myself, I can't ingest cannabis that has mm-hmm. mold. Someone that has, you know, an immune compromised system, they really can't ingest that. So mm-hmm. the cannabis would have to be grown in a very, very clean, sterile environment for it to be considered medicinal at that point mm-hmm. is what I'm guessing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
mm-hmm.
it's going to be very strict. The FDA is not going to be like, yeah, give us outdoor all day. We'll turn it into something. You know, it's going to be, it has to be very clean product going in and coming out, right?
Coming out, lot numbers, mm-hmm. all of that reporting for bad stuff going. I mean, there's a lot of like tracking with it.
And then now we'll have federal testing regulations on cannabis for medical now, right? Not just a state sanction one.
I think eventually.
Yeah.
Or I'm hoping that they just leave it up to the states to regulate it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just can't. To interchange between the states, then you'd have to be completely compliant with everything because you want to go across state lines. But if everything is just done in our state and doesn't leave our state the way we already have it, like, why mess with a broken system?
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm thankful that we've actually expanded our medical cannabis program and we've strengthened it throughout the years, because now it's essentially just flipping a switch. And so now here's a couple questions that I've had. So I'm a medical cannabis cardholder. If I go through the border check, are they going to take my weed now? Yeah, they still take it. That sucks.
Well, because they so we always have to remember federal will always supersede state. So just because they're federal, they have to. It's like if they don't, it's not, they're not doing their job.
I mean, after Schedule 3 goes through.
Oh, after Schedule 3 goes through,
I'm sorry,
through,
I should have clarified. Okay,
After Schedule 3 goes through, no. They should not federally, because if it, like you said earlier, kind of it'd be medicinally, federally legal. So if you have your medical card on you, they shouldn't confiscate it, because now it's medical. And so you should be able to pass through checkpoints and things like that. But for right now, no, they'll still take you away from you.
Yeah. My bad. I should have worded that better. I should have worded it better. Yeah, so... And I guess the same thing goes for the, you know, businesses that are cannabis and they're shipping up north. If they're medical after Schedule 3, the Border Patrol will be hands off. Of course, they're going to have all the proper documentation and everything that goes with it. Of course, they'll have the FDA, whatever documentation they need, or whoever alphabet person needs the paper signed or whatever. I'm sure they'll have it.
The tax to cross the line on the border and then the tax to enter.
Sure. They'll be able to cross all the T's and make sure that it's going. So a lot of people have asked me that question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I figured that, yeah, that's the case. But I figured I'd ask you, too, and get a second opinion.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you are in the medical field and you get a lot of these good updates. You know, you're very tuned in, you know, when it comes to the medical stuff, and it's great because you share a lot of good information with me, and I appreciate that. And it helps, you know, because people need to be informed. And, you know, that's what we're doing today, because I've had so many questions and I got tagged in posts and all kinds of stuff. What's going on? I'm like, I'm working on it. Give me a minute. So, you know, we're answering it right now. So yes, once this goes through, which it's going to take time, this isn't going to happen next week. They did send it to the White House something. I forget what it's called, but they pretty much sign off of it and they go somewhere else and they go somewhere else to confirm it. So it's going to be months, you know, if not maybe a year before we kind of see the actual change and solidification, you know, pretty much, right?
And of course, the election is going to have so much to do with it, because Biden just did endorse the change to go from 1 to 3-2. So, I mean, that's heavy for a president to say, let's do this. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it will. And another question I had is, will I be able to take my medical cannabis card and go to the dispensary still and purchase, like, you know, like I did?
As far as I see, the way things are now, I think nothing will change, because we have a good tracking system. And like I said, that's what the DEA, I mean, that's what it's all about, is the safeguards and making sure the Schedule 3, the potential for abuse, somebody's actually supervising you. So I think the way that the medicinal cannabis program is already set up is already, I mean, you have to see a provider, you have to talk to them about it. They at least give you some kind of recommendation of what to do, and then you're free to go and get it.
Yeah.
And then if they ask, how much did Chad have last year? Why do we need to look for it? That would be another reason. It would still be HIPAA. So they wouldn't be able to access it just because, oh, let's look at Chad today.
Yeah.
But if they needed to and they were doing like a federal audit, they could randomly pick you, connect your license, your medicinal card, and then your usage together. And then here you go, federal government. Yeah. He's compliant.
Yeah. It's like, thank you. Okay. Leave us alone.
Yeah.
So that's good, because, you know, we got ahead of everybody, you know, like is what I feel, is what I'm hearing too, is that we're kind of ahead of the curve when it comes to most of this stuff, because I don't even think even California has the tracking that we do when it comes to the medical side.
Right.
You know, like,
I think the other state that is better, or does it better, maybe, I don't know, is Oklahoma.
Okay.
Oklahoma has their model in place. They have a good medical model there too, and they actually have like the temporary, where I can write you, like, let's say you're having really bad insomnia because your dog died. I can write you 10 milligrams of indica 30 minutes before bedtime is needed for insomnia, and then you go and pick up 30 days of that, and then hopefully you sleep better without your dog, and after 30 days you'll adjust and be okay. And then it ends.
Okay.
So, like, they have it that way, the way other prescriptions start and stop.
They give you a program.
Yes.
Just follow. Okay. You're not just left to your own, like, right now. You know, like, well, you know, with good doctors, you're not. But, you know, usually, you know, you're just given the card and saying, all right, well, go to the dispensary, have fun, you know, or, you know, whatever. So that's good, because certain people need that, you know, and certain people that are just using it, like my vets. Some of my vets are guilty as shit of this. You know, they just go smoke weed, do whatever, and then don't do anything else. You know, don't talk to a doctor. They don't exercise. They don't try to figure anything out. It's just smoke weed, you know, and that's it. And so that's one thing that I try to advocate to them is that you can't just smoke weed. You got to do other things too. Like, you know, I talk to a therapist as well. I talk to my doctors. And I also have other activities that I do. You know, I'm actually pretty busy, but you know, I work out, you know, I make sure that I have my hobbies. I have my gardening and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, every year, you know, I have a good little garden. I love fishing, you know, stuff like that too. And mm-hmm. you know, you just got to keep yourself, I'm not occupied, but you know, you can't just do one thing and mm-hmm. expect that to be what's going to work. I just tell them it's a tool that goes in your toolbox, mm-hmm. you know, and you pull it out when you need it.
And it should be helping you live your life. So like, even if we were in a visit, it's helping you live your life. You're working, you're exercising, you're doing everything you should be doing. And occasionally, if you get symptoms, you will medicate. You're not having problems with it. You're showing up. But when it comes to that, you just smoke weed all day and sit on the couch and play video games. Like, that's not conducive to anything. Like, that's enabling you to kind of wallow back into like that depression or that sedentary lifestyle. So at that point, it's like, okay, is the cannabis helping you? And this is the point of a Schedule 3. Yeah. It has addictive potential. So now, is this, like I said, enabling you and making your condition worse? Or what do I got to do to pull you out of that to now? Yes, you play your video games in moderation. You allocate your time for entertainment, but you get up and go to work. You yeah. get up and take your kids to school. Like, mm-hmm. you do what you're supposed to
take
do.
Take a shower.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think at that point, it's always a question of who's in control, the cannabis or you.
Yeah. And that's a good question. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some times that, you know, even I have to ask myself, like, maybe I should cut back a little bit right now. And I'm kind of busy, or I have a lot going on right now. You know, let me cut back. I've done that before. I've done it many times. I did a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And then that's okay to do, you know, and taking tolerance breaks are okay to
yes,
do. And I
absolutely.
Tell it to people all the time. It is okay to do a tolerance break.
Yes.
And how long do you recommend a tolerance break?
Based on what research there is, once a year, at least a week. Some places, some sites will say, or research will say 30 days, but mm-hmm. it really is to desaturate how much you've saturated your cannabinoid yeah. receptors, and then they kind of fall off, loosen, and then you can start again.
Yeah.
But it's not truly the same kind of tolerance that you would have with like Oxycontin or something okay. like that. It's
yeah.
not, it doesn't work the same like that.
Yeah.
You still get the benefits from it, but just not as strongly. But with anything, like I said, taking that break for at least a week to be like, okay, who's in control?
Yeah.
Is it me or is it the cannabis?
Yeah.
And of course, life is harder without it, but if all of the cannabis farms burn down tomorrow, what are you going to do? Like, you have to be able to manage your life that way. So anyway, it's just trying to keep that in perspective when you're medicating. But the tolerance break, definitely adding in the CBD too, because if you're too THC heavy and all you do is THC all of the time, you need a little bit of the CBD. And sometimes with when patients complain that they're not feeling the effects anymore, that's really what's wrong,
yeah.
is that they're just too heavy on the THC side and they actually need the CBD for it to have the full effects again.
Yeah. And there's times where I take CBN to sleep, you know, at night. Uh-huh. Yeah.
CBN yeah. and then CBG, the most powerful one of all.
CBGO.
That one too, any kind of pain, inflammation, cancer, epilepsy, that one is the one that's been studied, tried and true internationally. If you can find that in high amounts or like a tincture, that can really help with, yeah, things
and,
like cancer.
And with Schedule 3, we'll be able to kind of weed those out more and kind of get those
Hopefully,
cultivars
yeah.
up ahead. Yeah, that's
yes.
great to hear. So thank you for that. So a couple more of these, I guess, little questions. So we talked about it before, recommendations for federal employees. And I've had this question a couple of times too. So could a top secret clearance intel guy get a medical cannabis card if he works for the government?
Right now, no.
Okay. But once Schedule 3 goes through?
Once Schedule 3 goes through, potentially, yes.
Okay.
It would take some policy changes within agencies as far as human resources. But at that point, Schedule 3 is on par with Tylenol with codeine. So if you were to need a drug test, you upfront say, okay, I'm taking medicinal cannabis for insomnia. I'm taking my hydrocodone for my broken ankle. And then you go pee in the cup and then magically that's what they find in your system because that's what you reported and it's fine
yeah.
because you had a doctor's order.
Yeah.
So, and that's the kicker is that are you being supervised and is it for a therapeutic reason? It meets the requirements of our laws and what we're doing within the state. And then federally, I mean, treat it the same as you would an opioid.
Yeah.
If for them to be having it, they're using it for a purpose of whatever's treating their medical condition. They have a card saying that they've talked to a medical provider, not just bought it off the street corner. And I mean, all intents and purposes, at that point, if it's medical, I mean, it should be allowed.
Yeah.
Because now Schedule 3 in that bucket now, federally, medicinally legal, they're not using it for fun time. They're using it for a condition. And same as alcohol, same rules apply. You wouldn't drink within 12 hours of your shift. You wouldn't show up to work smelling like you just came out of a bar. You shouldn't roll up to work after you just hotboxed your car. Like, no, that's not okay. But even like that, to learn those things, if a federal employee takes an edible at the end of the day to go to sleep because he's on, I don't know, presidential detail and he had to dodge a assassination attempt. I mean, those are the things that keep you up at night when you're in jobs like that. And so if you're not going to be on the clock for another 2 or 3 days and it's your weekend, you should have some solid sleep.
Yeah.
And if your doctor agrees and you have the card, well, why not? I would much rather you be doing that again than like Ambien or Restoril or something heavier that's more addicting.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's just a mindset change to hopefully help. Hopefully it will go through. And then again, if, depending on what happens in the next election, that I think will have a lot to do with it, too. How quickly?
Yeah, me too. Because
for federal employees, anyway.
Yeah, because that's a big one. You know, I have a lot, you know, a lot of vets. You know, a lot of my buddies. You know, they're still federal employees, and you know, and one thing that kind of I just thought of right now is military people, active duty. So this means, well, the military would have to actually. So they're under a total different. They're under the UCMJ. So the UCMJ would actually have to change, and the military would have to change their regulations. But this opens it up to them to allow it. And the certain cases, I'm guessing.
I think military certain cases, because if you're active duty, you have to be ready to snap and go.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. Like maybe the 12-hour thing isn't possible, but then they would tell you, no, you're not allowed. You have to do this instead.
Yeah.
But again, a doctor's evaluation, when you go through everything, they can tell you what should be okay and what's not, depending on what you need to do or what your job duty is.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be jumping out of a plane, probably not. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, let's find something different to help you sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I want you completely clear 12 hours before, and you don't know when you're going to be called to jump out of a plane.
Yeah.
So yeah, with good reason, I think as long as everybody's, again, mindset and perspective change a little bit, I think the doors will just open a lot for a whole lot of people in different ways.
Yeah. And real quick, you know, it opens the doors to many things, especially for, you know, like the businesses. You know, they get more more perks and stuff like that. And, you know, I guess we'll talk about that now. We'll talk about the 280E thing. So 280E goes away for medical cannabis. So the recreational cannabis that we have in the state, I'm kind of thinking that we're still going to have the 280E tax for that, because that's in a limbo. That's still federally illegal. You know, like we're going to have that program regardless in the state, because the state would lose a lot of money. You know, like we're at $1 billion now. We'll lose millions and millions of dollars by getting rid of that. There's no point. We're already saying F the federal government's, you know, law on that. You know, we're already doing our own thing, just like, you know, several other states. You know, we're not the only one.
Yeah.
So 280 tax goes away for medical cannabis, but for you recreational people that who's all been asking me what's going to happen to us, what's going to happen to us, nothing. Pretty much the same thing that you're doing right now, your same thing you're going to do when this happens, because the 280E is only for medical, only if you follow all of the federal guidelines and you meet all of the requirements. So if you do that, then yes, you will be, but if not, then you'll be with us on this side here, stuck in New Mexico. This opens it up also for interstate commerce for medical cannabis. A lot of people I've been seeing were like, oh my God, all this California weed's going to be here, but it's only going to be medical cannabis, and medical patients are only going to have access to it through medical cannabis means. So what that means is, if I don't have a medical cannabis card and I go to the, you know, dispensary and they have a product from California, well, I'm not going to be able to purchase that because I'm a recreational user, and that's for only medical cannabis, because that's the only way that you can get a product from California legally here in the state now at that time. So there's the answer for that. So now, are we going to see a flood, or is it going to, you know, flood our whole market? No, there's only 81,000 patients in New Mexico currently right now. It was on the page earlier, actually, when we popped it up. So there's only 81,000 patients right now. That number could increase, and it might increase. You know, I mean, do you think it might increase with this happening?
I think so. Yeah. When, because right now most people that come to get certified, it's more the tax savings now to it. But now knowing this, especially the federal guys later, I mean, I would think a lot more people will go get certified knowing that they'd be allowed to with work restrictions.
Yeah,
I think so.
I think so too. And keep in mind, guys, 280E isn't going to like go away for everything. It's just going to go away for medical cannabis. It was put in the 80s. And it's something that's probably not going to go away until the drug war is actually over and done with. And who knows how long that's going to take for that to end. Mm-hmm. So we don't see an end of actual 280E being a thing anytime soon. But for medical cannabis, it's going to be a done deal once this goes through. As we've been saying, this is not set in stone yet. And there's still a lot of stuff that needs to happen. There's a lot of more signatures that need to go through before we get anything that's like confirmed on this. So here's another question. If I have my medical cannabis card, you know, like I'm going through the state and I want to go to, let's say, Houston. Mm-hmm. Do you think I would be okay with that too? Because it's prescribed and everything?
Texas is its interesting own entity.
Yeah, it is. Because, you know, their laws are not at all.
I think once it becomes, again, once it's
solid, once it's changed, of
once
course,
it's changed, Schedule 3 federally, then yeah, you should be able to bring it in and out the same way you do your Tylenol with codeine. Mm-hmm. You should have it in its prescription bottle, exactly how you take it, labeled. It says it's to you. You have your card. They shouldn't confiscate it at that point. But like I said, Texas could do like Texas, Florida, and Arizona are doing right now and deciding to ban all abortions for Kingdom Come because that's what we did in the 1860s. So, I mean, they could decide to close too. They could confiscate it from you, I guess, at that point. But I don't know if they would have grounds to arrest you because it's medicinally legal, so they would not be able to.
Yeah.
So I would say yes, that once it's a Schedule 3, you should be able to travel with it within the states because it's federally accepted Schedule 3.
Yeah. And I kind of feel the same way with like transport too. You know, once everything goes through, you know, transport should be protected and everything because it doesn't make sense that, you know, a state should say, well, you're going through my state, I'm going to arrest you. It's like, but this is federally legal, like with hemp right now. That's the same thing. You know, we're going, we've dealt with that with hemp already, actually, I guess is what I should say. Certain people have had their hemp confiscated because of certain wonky laws and everything. So we might see that for a little bit. Due to confusion, but it should be okay to do because that we saw that on the hemp side, them going through different states. And if you're just transporting, you're not sitting there, you know, pulling pounds out and then, you know, secretively driving off, you should be okay. But if you're doing shady stuff, then good luck to you. So all of this stuff that is happening right now is backdooring and stuff like that. If you're going to be Schedule 3, don't even think about it. Don't even breathe that idea out. Because you are screwing yourself more than you're thinking. If you think just fines and everything from the CCD here in New Mexico is bad, the federal, don't don't even think about it. Keep your hands as clean as possible and follow every single rule that is on there. Because if not, they will come for you. This isn't dealing with the state, you know, because you're just dealing with one state. You're dealing with the whole federal government at that point. So just be very careful. If you are going to go this route, because I do believe that we're going to end up with two different industries, because I kind of feel they're going to change the regulations to say medicinal cannabis is no longer Schedule 3 and no longer 280E. However, recreational cannabis will still be. I kind of feel that's going to happen. Yeah. You know, the government does it all the time. So we'll see what happens because there's a lot that can change. Like even what we're seeing right now, they could actually not sign it, you know, and then we're stuck with what we have now.
If the outcome of the election is different, or not in favor of green, it could possibly get totally shut down. So it remains to be seen.
Exactly. But you know, that's pretty much all the questions that I had from every. Have you had any questions for anybody, you know, that you would want to answer at least? Because I know it's so new, but I've been getting bombarded with questions and I've answered most of them that people have asked me. But
I think that pretty much encompasses the things that people have asked and like how it's going to work.
Because I mean, we even talked about Big Pharma, you know, like, and I agree, you know, that Big Pharma isn't really much of our worry right now, because mm-hmm. they're not in any industry. If they really wanted to get in, they would have been in, mm-hmm. you know, already through whatever means. Because look at the MSOs, the way they get in, and all these bigger companies.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, if they wanted to, they could have done a subsidiary company, whatever, and got in somehow. Mm-hmm. But they didn't. Now, can they? Will they? They might. A couple might try. But as I said, with the big companies, with the big rows, they just can't keep the quality control under control. And at that point, it becomes non-medicinal, and you just kind of wasted a bunch of time and money. Mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of them have taken the risk factors into consideration. It's probably saying, oh, we're probably better off on the route that we're going versus trying to capitalize on this. You know, there's Marinol, and they can go deal with that if they want. Or I don't know. What other ones do they have?
Yeah, Marinol, Dronabinol. But like I said, it's very hard to find. Mm-hmm. It's expensive.
Yeah.
It's kind of hit or miss. But there isn't like a ton of people out there making it, or even a ton of people that even prescribe it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just out there, but no one uses it. So anyway, and it would be, I would think it would be the same if, let's say, Big Pharma came out with a capsule for sleep. It would still be then go to provider's discretion whether they want to prescribe it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it would be like any other drug, changing your mind about it. And some people just are never going to change their mind about it either.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's huge profitability in it for Big Pharma to like make a product, but it would be cool
if
they did.
Yeah, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, and we'll see where the tides end up at the end of the day. Because like I said, this has a very long process, and there's a lot of alphabet entities in the federal government that have to deal with this. They have to create new regulations. There's probably going to be new alphabet people introduced and created because of this. I'm just guessing from what other things happen in our nation when something like this happens. They create new ones. Like, let's say if we legalized it and, you know, descheduled it, they would have, you know, had it the ACATEF for, you know, alcohol, tobacco, cannabis, and firearms, you know, so mm-hmm. they would have added it there. So this is all pending if everything goes the way that we think it's going. Now, like you said, the election, that's actually a big one. If the election goes a different way, we could see the timeline change. We could see it never happening, and we could see it happening, but happening in a worse way that we wanted. So be very vigilant. Read about this. I'll keep you guys updated as much as I can. And thank you so much, Dr. Lawyer, for showing up today and, you know, giving your two cents and everything. And it's been great. I learned a lot from you today.
And I'm not a doctor. I'm a nurse practitioner.
I'm sorry, nurse practitioner. So in the Army, we call all medical people docs. Medics, we call them doc. So it's kind of an old habit that doesn't die. Yeah.
You know, anyway, that's a whole other conversation. But that comes up a lot, too, that physicians especially get mad when we are called doctor. But there are nurse practitioners that have, many have their doctorate, doctor of practice. But we're using the doctor not as a physician. It's your doctorate. But they still get, like, upset about it because it's, like, licensing and things like that.
So, interesting. Yeah. So it's, like, little technical things.
Nuances. But, I mean, that makes more sense to me that you just call somebody doc because they're the ones that patch you up.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, my apologies, but
that's okay.
The reason why.
Yeah. Me too. That's my disclaimer. Because then somebody's going to be like, she said she was a doctor. You're correct. Okay.
No, that was my fault because of my Army brain, guys. So I apologize. But anyway, thank you again for, you know, coming today. And thank you again for Turquoise Bloom for, you know, your sponsorship for this episode. And I appreciate it. So keep watching, guys. I'm going to keep y'all updated. If I forgot anything, I apologize. I mean, this is a long episode, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about, and this is just came out. So more information is going to be coming out as time goes. I can't predict anything. I can only really assume at this point. So we'll see what happens. Time is going to be our best friend with this matter. So make sure you guys like, subscribe, follow, whatever you got to do to stay in the know. And so that way, you know what you can do at Schedule 3. So I'll see you guys here next week. All right. See you later. Shoots.